Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and it is my pleasure to welcome you to the Labrish this evening. I hope you're settled in your easy chair as we do it on the island, and I am very grateful that tonight, as we speak, our island is safe and secure, and people are sitting in their easy chair in their backyards. And at this time, we know what's going on in our sister country, and our hearts go out to them, and we continue to just pray and hold the survivors and the people helping the survivors just in our thoughts. And I thought we would dedicate this evening to going over some history of Jamaica's earthquakes in order to get some perspective of the fact that while there is life, there is always hope. And there's so many things about our island that people in the diaspora are not too familiar with, but I thought it would be relevant to dig up some history of what Jamaica faced, you know, different periods. And the Jamaica I knew when I grew up there, which was in the, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, I remember experiencing some earthquakes, not devastating ones. But I remember more than once, I'm sort of can't really remember how many times, but I would say in different parts of the island, I remembered seeing things shake and being scared. And of course, I remember a more serious one in 1957. However, this evening, I thought that we would talk a little bit about how Jamaica, or at least Kingston, which would be similar to Port-au-Prince, because Port-au-Prince is the capital and Kingston was the capital at the time. You know, it came back from being totally devastated in 1907. And we that grew up during the period I mentioned really did not see any effects. And we were not that acquainted with exactly what happened. But thanks to the people who recorded some history, we'll be able to get enlightened this evening and know that there's hope. Because although it might not be on the same scope as it is in Haiti, because there were a lot less people. There were a lot less people on the earth at that time, some of these times that I'm going to discuss. But, you know, it can give us an idea that whoever survived, and if they get through, or when they get through, you know, their fears and their whatever injuries they have, there is hope. There's always hope, because the important thing is that they're alive. So I want to start out by just giving you some dates. And I see that there's several people listening on the board. And I also want to welcome the listeners online. Unfortunately, I'm not able to interact with you. So if you do want to weigh in on the conversation, you'll have to dial in at 718-766-4558. So, and as usual, I'd like to ask the listeners on the board, whenever you want to join the Labrish, because this is what this is, a Labrish, I just sort of get some topics that I think would be good to discuss in the backyard, and we can Labrish about. And because we all want to focus on the healing of Haiti, I thought it would be good for us to discover or learn about some facts that might be similar to what they are going through. So put up your hands by hitting one on the telephone when you want to chat with me. So I want to start off by this information I'm going to read to you came from Pieces of the Past, which is a segment done by the Gleaner Company, and it just have wonderful information about different events in Jamaica. But this specifically covered earthquakes. There was one in June 1692 where Port Royal was destroyed. In August 28, 1712, they had another earthquake in Port Royal, and also in August 1722. I mean, this sounds so long ago, and it is. Now, Savlamar was destroyed, and Kingston, it said Kingston was damaged. In October of 1777, Port Royal was damaged again. In November of 1812, it seems like Port Royal got a lot of hits. Not necessarily that it was always destroyed. However, you know, apparently the earthquake, or the epicenter, as they call it, must have been located near there, or actually there. Now, in January of 1907, Kingston and Port Royal was hit again. And I have some information on that I think is similar to some of the things that is happening in Haiti that I'm going to share with listeners tonight. And in March, this is the one I remember, in 1957, a hurricane on the scale of 8 on the Richter scale, the epicenter of that was in Hanover. And I remember shaking in Kingston. I was not in Hanover, but that's quite a history. Now, incidentally, I asked younger folks, because, you know, most of the listeners know that I'm a senior, and a lot of my fans that call in each week, I see some of them on the board tonight, perhaps not quite as old as I am, but most of the people who call in or I've interacted with, most of them, not all, have left Jamaica before or shortly after Jamaica became independent. So I asked a friend of mine who has children that grew up, they would be perhaps a little older than my children, but they don't remember experiencing any shaking in Jamaica when they were growing up there. They're living here now. But they say, no, I asked them. I remembered as a child while I was in school or home, things would start to shake. I mean, it was never anything where anything fell down, but I remember shaking. And if anybody on the board can remember any of those experiences, I'd love to for you to let me know, because sometimes I wonder if, you know, I'm getting so old that my information gets mixed up. But, oh, I see a hand raised. So let's see if I can get a little clearance here on my brain. 516-244, welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret. Who do I have?
Hi, Margaret. This is Janine. How are you?
I'm doing great, Janine. And you are calling from?
Long Island, New York.
Wonderful. Well, I said thanks for calling in.
Yes, I remember the 1957 earthquake because my sister and I, my older sister and I, we were coming from choir practice, and we were actually on the street when it happened, and it was some experience. We couldn't move. We were just hugging up. The road felt as if it was tilting to us. The cars on the street looked funny. And it was some experience because we were away from home. We were actually walking home at the time.
Isn't that something?
A while before it stopped, you know. And it, for us, it was a terrible experience because we, thank God, we had down too, you know.
Well, let me ask you something. Was that the first time you remember feeling an earthquake there?
That I can really, really remember. Maybe before, but not as severe as the one that happened that year. Maybe the one that was of a lighter nature, whatever. But to be honest with you, that one was really something else.
Right, I remember
that
one
in,
too. But I remembered, you know, do you remember that most every house, middle class house, had a china cabinet?
Yes.
Where they would store the things that you don't use every day.
The crystals and things.
Right.
China.
And I remember on a few occasions hearing them, you know, the glass hitting together while I was home as a little girl.
Yes.
And being very scared.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They were minor, but of course they seemed quite major. And I remembered, now that I have the memory triggered, I can almost hear the dishes and the glasses knocked together.
Yes.
The feeling of helplessness. You just feel helpless because you're like frozen in your tracks. You don't know what to do. But, you know, here's your experience of being on the street.
Street, yes.
So you were actually walking.
We were walking from church, Holy Rosary Church. We were living on Rockfort at the time, Winwood Road. And we went to choir practice at Holy Rosary Church. And we actually started to walk. And as soon as we got to this road by the name of Dunoon.
Right. I remember that.
All of a sudden, it started to shake. As a matter of fact, I remember this old lady. She was walking on the street. And for some reason, she ended up in my sister and myself arms. So actually the three of us hugging together.
But you knew immediately what was going on?
Oh, yes.
So how old do you think you were at that time? I mean, what, teenager?
Teenager.
Okay.
Teenager. I would say a teenager.
Now, I'm saying that to say, can you imagine, I'm sure that perhaps small children were on the road too.
Yes.
But you can imagine what it does to a child that's not quite sure what is going on. At least you knew it was an earthquake.
Yes.
And as I, you know, go through the information about past quakes in Jamaica and I think about my own personal experience, I can remember, as I tell you, the shaking, being in the house, being in an enclosed place. And to me, all I can really remember is the sound of the dishes.
Yes, of the dishes moving.
As it shook, which I am sure was not quite as frightening as being on the street if I was that age, you know?
Yes.
So I'm saying that to say you can imagine the poor children that are now not only went through the whole experience, but they're alive and their parents aren't.
Exactly, because it's just to show you that you never know. We were fine. We were at choir practice. It was finished. And then we started to go home. And we were walking okay until that point. And at that point, it's like everything changed. Everything changed. It's like, oh, my God, is the earth going to open now? You don't know what to expect. You're looking at the cars. You're looking at this. You're looking at that. As I said, thank God I had my sister with me and this lady. So, you know, all three of us just hug and we stayed that way until we didn't feel anything else. And then, unfortunately, we had to leave her, but my sister and myself started to run home.
You didn't even walk.
Oh, no, walk. No.
Yes, yes, yes.
We went as fast as we could.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you so much for sharing that story with us. I'm going to mute your mic. So I'll open it up. I see somebody else would like to share with us. So let me open it up for them. And it's 718-379. Welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret. You're on the Labrish.
This is Lay.
Hi, Lay.
And I can remember...
First of all, you always have to tell listeners where you're calling from, because remember, people listen to the show at odd times.
This is true, and I'm in the Bronx, New York.
Okay.
And I am remembering an earthquake. I can't tell you pinpoint the year, but it was... And it wasn't really severe, but you never... When you're in one of these things, you don't know how it's going to pan out, whether it's going to be severe or not. All you know, it's everything is shaking around you, and how severe it's going to get is left to your injured imagination at the time. I was just coming home from school on my bicycle, and... people started to, you know, grumble in the streets. I was coming home in the streets, and I actually got off the bicycle, which, you know, you're better off, as they say, not standing still or drive. If you're in a car, you least experience the movement. Similarly, on a bicycle, it would be the same. If you're moving, you don't really get the impact. But I got off the bicycle, and it was frightening. It did not last very long, but, 25 seconds, 30 seconds is a lifetime when you are in one of these situations. But
and were you a teenager then or young?
Yes, I was, yeah.
Okay.
This has to be, probably around 1949-50.
Right. Now, I know that there are several that are not listed here because they were not very severe.
It depends,
I read,
of course.
The severe one.
Recording of these events were not as forthcoming then as it is now. We, in most cases, had to depend on the recordings of such events in other parts of the world where they measure these things. I think now, I'm not sure, somebody could correct me, that there is instruments that they can measure in, used to measure in an earthquake in Jamaica now. But Jamaicans have always been involved in this. I mean, the priest that taught me at St. George's had connections where he would be able to tell moments after an earthquake because of his connections in the States where they would have these instruments, what the magnitude of the earthquake was.
Right, right.
And of course, by this time, we all know that when we hear of a magnitude 5 point such, so much, and up to seven, seven is a biggie, as was the case in Haiti.
Right.
But Jamaica had recorded back in, I think you cited 1907, a magnitude of 7.2.
Right, right.
Yeah. So the what I was experiencing could have been in the 4 category. Who knows? I don't remember, you know.
Because I remember, but do you know that there was apparently was a period where there are actually Jamaicans who might have left Jamaica as teenagers who they've never experienced an earthquake.
Yeah.
The younger generation.
Yeah, because if I had I not experienced that one, I probably wouldn't have experienced any. Because for the one you were, Janine was just citing,
57. You weren't there.
I wasn't there.
Right, right.
So, you know, this was the one I experienced was big time to me.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The one Janine experienced was even bigger time.
Oh yes, yes, and I experienced that one too because I left Jamaica in 59,
okay.
And I was speaking to one of my girlfriends in Florida, and she says she remembers. She didn't remember the year. I sort of verified the year when I did the research, but she remembers she was home and she ran out in the street, you know, and I cannot remember where I was, but I remember experiencing several. One of the reasons, there weren't major quakes, but one of the reasons is because, you know, I was moving perhaps around the island. Sometimes I could be visiting, you know, some place, and there was a tremor there. I think they used to call them a tremor.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
not
what
necessarily
it is.
An earthquake.
That's what an earthquake is.
Right. Mm-hmm. But we just used that word because it was not really, it didn't last long and it wasn't very severe.
Yeah.
It just made music, you know. To me, it just made music, but it was quite scary at the time that the things were, you could hear the rattle of the things, you know, that were housed in the cabinet. In the channel.
Oh, yes, I'm sure that people identify with that because we had hanging things in those china closets,
right,
cabinets,
right.
And you know, especially the sound of the crockery was, you call it your good china. It had some really good sounds when even when you walk by, if your house was you know,
squeaky,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to, you know, there's so much, well, I'm sure that perhaps the survivors are not even in a state, some of them mentally, where they can talk about their experience, you know, and what they felt and where they were. I don't know if a lot of that is coming out now. But it's interesting to find that in this article, The Pieces of the Past, I found, and it's on the website, people can go to the Gleaner Company's website and find this information. But I know a lot of time, because I'm doing the research, you know, I perhaps would get a little more detail. But there's wonderful information there. And I also have some other information that is not necessarily in that segment of Pieces of the Past that was revealed by Dr. Joy Lumsden, who is such a blessing to our history, because she's doing so much piecing together. And I hope next week I'm going to be doing people, Jamaicans, who helped to rebuild Kingston and different buildings that they were responsible for, you know, getting rebuilt one way or another, whether they were the contractor or negotiated or something. She has a lot of information on that. And these are names that we know.
Yeah.
These are not English people. These are, you know, Jamaicans.
Yeah, well, as far back as a book written in 1807, A History of Jamaica by Robert Rennie. Mm-hmm. He chronicles the history of some of these devastating events. And one of the things, I was reading a little bit about his recollections, and it's interesting, in those days, when you had cited back when you were describing Port Royal, that it was a really godforsaken place, because there were a lot of bad people existed there.
Right, right.
And they were, a lot of reports came out that after the earthquake of 1907, that this was divine retribution on the people of...
You know, that was one of the similarities I was going to talk about, because, you know, we're all humans.
Yeah.
And, you know, how you evaluate something sometimes is so similar to people in the past.
Yeah, well, if
One of the points I wanted to bring out too.
Yeah, if you think of the Bible and Sodom and Gomorrah and all of these things for so-called bad people, this is kind of logical for them to associate it with
think that way. Yeah,
a payback by the man upstairs.
Right, right, right.
Also, there are some writings by. Another woman, that a Dr. Margaret Wiggins Grandison, and she used to be at the University of West Indies, and she did a lot of research there on earthquake and such events.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these are probably colleagues are of. Dr. Lumsden, and they
right, quite like
share a similar
passion
background. Yeah,
right, right. I wanted to give you some a little information that I thought was interesting on the earthquake of 1692,
mm-hmm.
And this is actually some what we'd call eyewitness report then. As we're calling it now, but this one party wrote on June 7, 1692, after winding up his morning prayer service. Now, this was someone writing about him. The Reverend Heath, Emmanuel Heath, the Anglican rector of Port Royal, left St. Paul's Church and walked to a nearby tavern. Oh, that was interesting.
There were a lot of taverns from what I read in Port Royal.
Right. There he met his friend, John White, who was president of the island's council. And the two men got to chatting. Some goblets of wormwood, W-O-R-M-W-O-O-D, wormwood wine, were brought out. And White lit his customary pipe of tobacco before it was outed and the wine drunk. The floor suddenly began to rumble and shake. Lord, sir, the Reverend Heath asked his friend, what's this? Now, 309 years ago, on this day, this is some writing by somebody about this event 309 years ago. Somewhere between 11:15 a.m. and noon, the report differs on the actual time, although it was report was written in 1950.
Okay.
No. They say in 1950, an archaeologist, first divers, are said to have found a watch which x-rayed. They use X-ray photography to reveal the actual time of the earthquake was 11:43 a.m. Isn't that something? That in 1950, they were able to pinpoint the time that the earthquake actually happened in Port Royal. And it said the ground opened up in different places and simultaneously swallowed bodies and buildings alike. So you see that there's lots of similarities there, you know, because the earth just opened up.
Yeah, well, if I was on my computer for half an hour looking for a map of Jamaica that some kind folk had sent me regarding earthquakes, I could not find it. And I would have been able to show you over the phone how Jamaica was in the line of the same fault, kind of marginally, not directly, as Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, this Dr. Margaret Wiggins Grandison that I mentioned before had predicted in one of her
writings,
studies,
yes, I saw that,
that an earthquake was going to happen along this fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it could have been Jamaica, it could have been Haiti, and it turned out to be Haiti.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this report went on to say that dead bodies and bones formed uprooted graves, from uprooted graves. You can imagine that when the earth is shaking, this is my sidebar, that anything that is underneath will come on top. Possibly. You see what I'm trying to say? So here are people trying to scramble around to find some steady ground, and bones and dead people are coming up on top of the ground. You can imagine the horror of that? Oh, my goodness. So it said that the mammoth waves into the towns destroyed buildings, and between 1,500 to 2,000 people lost their lives. We're talking about 1692. That was a whole lot of people then.
Yeah, well, what some of the stats that I saw regarding that earthquake, they said they had 2,000 casualties,
mm-hmm.
and an additional 3,000 people were injured.
Right.
In Port Royal, and as a result of all of this devastation, Port Royal was a very active port where ships would come in with very meaningful cargo of varying various kinds, including what the pirates had scuttled from other countries and all. And of course, they had the government records and stuff there, so they had to move them to Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
During that period. That's
right. I just came across an interesting fact here. You're right about the 3,000 injured and about 2,000 who died. When, if you think about this, you know, in a small place like Port Royal as we know it, in 1692, it would be, you know, catastrophic. You know, if you think of it now, we did not know Port Royal with a big population and a whole lot of buildings and all of that. But I would say that on some scale, it could be at the time similar to what has happened in Haiti. But the interesting thing I wanted to point out to you, the two people that I mentioned before, the minister and his friend.
Yeah.
Okay, remember he
mentioned. How did they fare? Did they stop drinking or did they drink more?
Right. Now, it said here that the Reverend Heath is even believed to have reached his house and found everything in the same order in which he left them. Many included Reverend Heath felt the quake to be a sign of divine retribution for Port Royal's reputation as the wickedest city in the world.
There you go.
Isn't that something? Same Reverend. because he walked past a whole lot of dead people. He was saved. I thought that was very interesting. Now, I wanted to also tell people that even then, there was looting. I'm talking about 1692.
But
there weren't a lot of poor people then there that time, my boy.
You know, I take objection to a lot of these reporters. When you have a tsunami or a thing, the first thing they're interested in is how the looting. Now, you tell me, after 3, 4, 5 days, and everything that you own is gone, and now it's survival. You know, there were situations, even in civilized people, they had a plane crash someplace, and 9 people survived, and they started eating each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Now, when you talk about looting, if you were in a situation like that, wouldn't you try to find, especially like in Haiti, if a supermarket fell down on the ground and you know there is something in the rubble, wouldn't you go in and try to get it?
But everybody's calling it looting, man.
I object to the looting.
Listen to me. If in 1692,
yes,
oil was not, my point is Port Royal did not have a lot of poor people at that time. They had a lot of bad people.
And I'm saying poor are not poor. It doesn't matter when you come into a situation.
Right. That's what
survival.
I'm saying.
It's
not just the poor people that are going to loot because they're hungry. Rich people can be hungry too, and it's a matter of survival.
Yeah.
But it's funny because they have been calling it looting for a long time.
Yeah, well,
that's the name that it's called for a long, long time.
Yeah, well, you know, reporters, people reporting on situations that they were not in will always find the word looting to be an appropriate or an apt word, as we say.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not the only one I hear a lot of comments on the radio, people calling in, especially people from Haiti. And the few government people that survived, they are all objecting to the term looters because it implies that the criminal aspect creeps in before you know it. I mean, we can see now that the criminals who were in the jails and there are no more jails are out there. So things are going to happen.
Right. Now back to what happened in, I'm just trying to see how a lot of the behavior that we seem to feel.
Very similar. Yeah.
Yep. Are so similar. It don't matter what period you research.
Right.
Because listen to this. It was really an awful scene. People were streaming past me in the streets. It had been at least 3 minutes since the rumbling had begun. Huge columns of smoke billowed in the sky. People were throwing buckets of water on a fire that had broken out at Marcy's brothel. the clothes of girls, no more than 6 years old, burst into flames on my right. Her mother was using a large towel to smother the blaze. I smelled something in the air like burning pork. Oh, God. The smell of feces, smoke, piss, and blood. Profaned my nostrils. Oh, I'm getting sick here. One man with a red handkerchief draped over his head. This is one of the people writing. And listen to what this man did. One man with a red handkerchief draped over his head shot another one at point blank range and immediately hunkered down to search the pocket of the victim. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
And people are alarmed now because people are fighting each other to get food. It's human nature. A drunken trio, arm linked, swaggered down Wright's Lane. They were singing 15 men on a dead man's chest, yo ho ho, and a bottle of rum.
One of them
screamed when the heavy cedar, a mannequin or something, which read Henry's work wood and carpentry, fell on him. His friends hardly missed a beat. They were so drunk or, you know, traumatized that this eyewitness said they didn't even miss a beat. They were skipping along, still singing their song. My point, people's behavior change when they're traumatized. You don't know what they're going to do. Some people will rush to help, and others will run away. Others will look away as if it didn't happen. Don't you see a lot of similarities in 1692 that people are writing about now?
Yeah.
My goodness. I mean, I am just mesmerized when I read some of these reports. And I really find it quite fascinating. But back to Backyard Labrish, and the reason we're here is because a lot of the history that is documented in about Jamaica in the Gleaner, and that's being researched by the different research scientists now and trying to piece it together, is just that, you know, other people's trying to put things together, and that is why the seniors, the Jamaica seniors, to leave a living history of their lives or things that may have been important to them, or I'm hoping that they will join me here with their stories on the backyard, because here in cyberspace it will never go away.
Mm-hmm.
Right now I understand that the library, which have a lot of wonderful old documents, are having trouble to even copy them because they're so fragile. And, you know, I suppose people would have to read them into an audio or so to have them last forever.
Mm-hmm.
But we that are alive now in this period have such a wonderful gift of doing things that we, I believe, will be here long after we're gone, pristine, because all the pictures that might have been on a CD-ROM or wherever it was not destroyed in my fire. You know, they were saved. So I encourage the seniors to make peace with the new technology and not make it scare them into not using it to its fullest. So I thought I would just do that right now. And, of course, I hope that you will visit us at www.backyardlabrish.com, which is a website where we can do a lot of interesting things. And most of all, you can join us here live while we're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock, labrishing about things in the backyard. So back to you, Leigh. And Janine, I'm going to open back the mic in case you want to weigh in.
Yeah, well, I just found what I was looking for, this map of the area. And I'm looking at the Cayman Islands, which is sort of northwest of Jamaica. They are slightly out of the line of the fault. Then you have this fault going straight through. As a matter of fact, there are like two strands of faults in that go through Jamaica. One is way up on the north coast. The other one is on the goes down like Manchester to the south coast to Sablamar area, and the other one goes through the middle you know, Mount Diablo and those places, right through Kingston on over to Port-au-Prince. So it's graphic when you see the possibilities here. You know, when one of our brother islands, if you want to put it that way, has something as terrific as what happened in Haiti, you should start to worry a little bit that it, you know, if it, maybe our time will come again soon. It's a terrible thought, but this has been the pattern though over years, that you have it in one place, and it's the possibility now exists in another place that is on the same fault line.
Right.
See what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's too bad I can't show you this. It's very graphic on the map. Yeah. So
I'm going to be, you know, trying to bring the website up to date, and if you send it to me, I can perhaps get it on the website. So anyone go on the website to listen to Blog Talk Radio, which you can do access.
Yeah.
All of the shows right on the backyardlabrish.com website.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. I now that I've found it and I see the date, I'll be able to do that very easily, send it to you.
Okay, very good. And we appreciate you, and I'm sure that the future generation will appreciate you. Because I know that even some people, if they have an interest in something, everybody does not always have the time to do the research. So I'm hoping that our listeners and the ones that come by after the show has aired will find it interesting. And I want to remind you again that we need you to spread the word. And if you enjoy being with us in the backyard, I see we have people on the board who never put their hands up, but I appreciate them that they hang with me. Most of the times for the entire show. And we'd like to ask you to share some of this, share the website and the fact that not only can people call in, but we'd like to get them on our mailing list so that they can find out what shows are coming up that they might have an interest. We're also open to suggestions as to what you'd like us to labrish more about. So, you know, I would like this to be a community affair where people have input. So feel free to make suggestions and to just relax when you're in the backyard. We come here not as a political platform or what is right or what is wrong, but just what we want to celebrate, what we want to enlighten people about, and what we want to preserve. And tonight, we want to preserve hope. We want to enlighten people about coming back from a disaster, because I don't know if we'll have enough time to go into all the details about what happened in Kingston, but I'm going to do, continue the segment next week, because there's so much to cover. I found some research by Dr. Lumsden about some interesting people who helped to rebuild Kingston. And we can't even think, I know I can't, of Kingston being rebuilt. I knew it as a vibrant, beautiful, as I say in the promo, place to see and be seen. Because when I was growing up, downtown Kingston and Hope Gardens were my two favorite places. And, you know, so many different places in Kingston that I found just so, at the time, you know, not having left Jamaica, they were like beautiful and magical. And, you know, when you're young, it's good that you can remember the great things or the pleasant things, the beautiful things. And we have to have hope for the children now that are, regardless of what part of the world they are, that they're not exposed to much beauty. And we were so privileged to have been there at that time, don't you think? Janine, your mic is open. So
okay.
Feel free to join the Labrish.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right?
Okay.
Now, I would now like to talk a little bit about the... Here's another sort of eyewitness report for the... I'm finished with the Port Royal so far. We're going to talk a little bit now about the Kingston earthquake of 1907. It was a Monday, January 14th, and this eyewitness said it was a regular day, sunny and hot, with a cloudless sky and what was said to be a faint breeze. At 3:32 p.m., the city of Kingston was busy enough. All was alive and well. Suddenly, there came the sound of a rushing, mighty wind, followed by the sound of a train roaring in a tunnel and the violent shaking of the earth, so that men and buildings were tossed about like puppets. Screams split the air. Within 10 to 20 seconds, a town of 46,000 had been rendered immobile. Hundreds lay dead or dying, buried beneath mounds of rubble and dust. By 3:33 p.m., three shocks had been felt, and every building in Kingston sustained some damage. Many in the lower part of the city were completely destroyed. Now, see the difference in the report there, because then there was exact, precise times, there were precise duration. You know, we're talking about a difference of 1862, did I say? And now we're at 1907. Mm. Isn't that interesting? I find all these little things interesting. I don't know why. Now, this was an account, you know, there are different accounts by different people, really. But this was by a Frederick Travers. Now, there's a lot more documentation on what happened in 1907. But, you know, it was a lot more catastrophic, because then there was a lot more people living there. Oh, I'm trying to get rid of the sound of the phone, only to find that the phone is in my pocket. So please bear with me for a minute while I get rid of this ringing cell phone. Sorry
about
that.
Sounds like we're in church.
Yes. Sorry about that. So let me close this door. And for the visitors to the backyard, again, we said this is a relaxed show, so we don't really have a very strict platform. Sometimes we even go off on other subjects as we labrish here in the backyard. But I wanted to sort of talk about a little of what I found from both Dr. Lumsden and Pieces of the Past. And Dr. Lumsden has a lot of information. It's not necessarily, you know, in sequence and not. She sort of puts it together as she finds it, which, you know, I really take my hat off to her, because she's working on several projects simultaneously, and she will post it as she gets verification, because she mentions all the time that she tries to verify, you know, the facts that she gets, and she collects them from different places. It could be from a death certificate, an article in a newspaper, or something in a book, you know, different things that she comes upon. So back to the 1907, and I did some of this last year, but I just thought that it would be relevant now that we are, you know, so wrapped up about the devastation in Haiti. And I always, Leigh, you mentioned about, you know, the possibilities, or it could have been Jamaica. And you're so right. I read that article that about the scientists you talked about.
Oh, yes.
But I think that what will help even in us as individuals and the people in Haiti and the people who are have relatives of people or are relatives of the people in Haiti is the possibility of hope. You know, while there is life, there's always hope. I really, really believe that. So the people that are alive cannot be without hope. You know, even though things are so desperate and so desolate now, we have to know, we have to hold on to hope because there's nothing else to hold on to. And what I'm trying to do is to even for us, to see how when we grew up, Kingston didn't look like a place that was ever devastated to me.
No.
We never, ever saw that.
No.
And it happened. You know, it was totally, not every building totally wrecked. Neither is it in Haiti. There, I read the story of a doctor who lives in Haiti who all the houses around him was crushed, are gone. And he's standing in a so much that he could take in a lot of people. He has the people all over his house. And he was able to salvage food. You know, of course, the roads are cut off and all of that. He was able to salvage food from other places that were destroyed to help to feed these people that came to his house because they had no place else to go. And I'm sure he knew there were he was a doctor, but he has people all over his place. So it goes to show that just like the minister went home and nothing was wrong with his house, you know, every now and then, even in the rich area and the areas with the more substantial houses, you have houses and hotels and places of business that are totally destroyed and the people missing, and then you have one house that just is just standing there. It's just amazing.
Look at their White House.
Right, right.
No more.
Uh-huh. And I think there's a hotel that several missionaries or volunteers from here, you know, there's a lot of Americans that are still missing.
And UN people.
Right, right. So it's really...
Well, you know, it's one thing to look at things from a historical perspective. And there's another thing to... It's another thing to experience it. Well, as you say, we are experiencing this now and observing Haiti. And we look back on the events of 1907 in Jamaica. As you were saying that, it's occurring to me that some of our grandparents must have experienced this at 1907 and thereabouts, you know. There must have been.
Because my mother was born in 1912.
There you go. So, you know, it's possible you still have survivors of those days around, and it's a time when people could look back on a situation. As you're saying, we don't know of how Kingston might have looked during that time, but
mm-hmm.
we can appreciate how it looks now. I'm afraid when it comes to Haiti that things are going to get even uglier now because the rainy season is coming up, and those people that don't have a place to live, the buildings are crushed and stuff like that, they are, what's going to happen to them, you know, when the rainy season starts? Where are they going to go? So that's
going to be a problem too.
That's a horrible thought. So these kinds of events, I'm even thinking back at that tsunami that we heard about, this huge wave. after, and it's funny, an earthquake can produce a tsunami, that's the way a tsunami is produced. But the earthquake that occurred during the tsunami in the Indonesia, wherever it was there the other day, happened in the sea. The epicenter was in the sea,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, in Jamaica, they mentioned things about the tsunami also in the earthquake of 1907, but it wasn't where the epicenter was, you know. It was more under a landmass, so to speak. So you didn't have that great wave
mm-hmm.
as you would if it were out in the deep. So, you know, a lot of things to reflect on, and as I say, when you grew up not experiencing these things, nowadays we have television, we can see any part of the world that has some event like this, and we empathize with them. Look at the way the world is coming to the aid of Haiti.
That's right.
You know, this would never happen
uh-huh.
way back.
Right.
This wouldn't have happened way back. But
to the saying of out of evil cometh good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there's a lot of good that's going to come from it, even personally with people, you know, that will reach out and help other people that normally they would not help. You know, it's a good thing for both parties, both the person helping, because they're expanding and growing and becoming a better person.
Right.
Because all of a sudden, you know, something touches them. So good comes to people in different ways, you know, in different forms. And we just have to know that in spite of all of the devastation and what has happened and what may happen, we still have to know that some good is coming, you know, will come to it. Some good will come to it. My whole board just went. So can
well, I can tell you why. The president is about to speak.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, perhaps I need to terminate the show and pick it up next week.
Yeah.
And I know that a lot of the fans are also fans of the president or concerned about what's happening in our economy and will want to hear the speech tonight. And I want to thank everybody for being here and to promise you that I do have a lot of other interesting information about the similarities of what's going on in Haiti or what went on and what will continue to happen perhaps for a period of time. And I know that I have been fascinated by researching the information, and I hope that the listeners on the line now and those who come back, my board has completely gone. Something went on here with my electricity. So if you would just respond to me, Leigh, I can't see the board, so I'm hoping you're still there.
Yes, I'm still there.
Okay. And, okay, it's back. Thank heavens. So I want to thank, I see that I have a raised hand from 301-942, and I'm going to open up the mic. Good evening. Welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret. Who do I have?
Oh, you got BJ here. I was just calling to let you know that I could still hear you, even though you said the board had gone blank. And I just could not get you at all on the PC. The two PCs, the voice is very, very, very soft. And I had to, you know, even though I put the volume all the way up, so I went phone-wise. That's all I have to say, nothing else. And I
Well, thank you so much for calling and letting me know. And I appreciate you being a listener.
Thanks.
And welcome you back. Please tell your friends about us. We just take this hour and a half sometimes to just relax and lavish as we know it.
Yes, I know.
And we appreciate your call. And where are you calling from?
from Maryland.
From Maryland.
Hi, how are you doing, sir?
Good.
Stop
good. Laughing.
Yeah. Did you talk about the earthquake in the 1950s yet?
Yes, we spoke about it earlier. Would you like
Janine experienced that?
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I was on the street with a friend from Canada. You know, I was running the streets.
Okay.
And I remember that earthquake very well, and I remember saying, Feet, if you aren't coming, I'm leaving you, and I was under the table.
Oh, so you were actually at home?
Yeah, I was at home at that time.
Oh, well, lucky you. One of our listeners on the board was on the road, on the street, actually.
Oh, I see.
And I just emphasize, because I figure that being on the street must be a lot more scary.
Yes, because I understand that you see cars in front of you shaking, and you feel yourself shaking and can't figure out what's going on, and then it dawns on you what it is.
That's
right.
But
at least you had a table to get under.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I did.
Well, I just was going. I'm about to terminate the show. We've gone over an hour. We usually go hour and a half, but since I was reminded that the president is speaking tonight,
yes, he is.
Figure I will bow out and give everybody a chance to listen. And to thank everybody again for being here. And I have a lot more information about our earthquakes with similarities of just people's not only behavior but recovery and just bravery and the heroes that we can celebrate, because that's what the backyard is all about. We're never going to be always gloom and doom. It is always going to be the possibility of hope and redemption and celebration.
Behind every cloud, there is a silver lining.
Silver lining.
Amen. Amen.
Amen, amen, Miss Janine.
Amen.
You know me, but I listen to you all the while, and I just shut my mouth. I don't say anything.
Oh, well, it's good to say.
Hopefully you're agreeing with me.
All right, guys, I'm gone.
All right. Bye-bye.
In now.
All right. Well, I want to welcome you back next week and tell your friends to listen to us, too. And people can always go back later and click on the show if they have the link.
Yes.
And
okay.
It will always play.
I've been telling them. I told all my whole club.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Okay. And
now
well,
I bid you tonight. Enjoy the president's speech and be back next week for some more labrish.
Sure, we will.
Okay, good night.
Night, sleep tight.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Janine.
Bye.
Bye.